Welcome, everyone, to Tales Over Tales podcast. It's your favorite host, Jordan.
Hello, it's Abigail.
How are you, my dear? I've missed you.
I know. It's been a while. We were just chatting about that, how it's been a little bit.
It's been a minute. And don't worry, listeners, your other favorite co-host, Alicia, will be back in June and July. But we're super thankful that we have Abigail with us this month. So tell me, it's been good catching up with you, but how are you doing?
Let's see. I've been doing pretty good. Yeah, everything's been going well, working, still have a job. So that's a plus. So yes. Monday morning, still, you know, waking up early. Still dreading
tomorrow's those. Monday, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks. But other than that, things have been pretty good. You know, like I'm thinking about highs and lows. So I would say, like, maybe a high would be that the sun is shining consistently. Right, we had a rainstorm yesterday, but other than that, the weather has been a lot better. We've had like dips where it's, you know, it's been 80 degrees and then it dips back to 40s and then it stays there for a few weeks, but now it's consistently been in like that perfect springtime temperature. So yeah, just been enjoying the sunshine, going on walks, just sitting outside, just, you know, all the good things that come with sunshine. That's awesome. Lows. Tomorrow's Monday, like you reminded me. That's a low.
That's a valid low.
Yeah. So that's been rough, you know, to think about. But today's my relaxation day to reset and mentally prepare for Monday. So hopefully it won't be too much of a low tomorrow.
Amen.
Yeah. I mean, what about you? What are highs and lows for you since the last time we spoke?
Oh my gosh. Well, I guess I would say my high. So I'm in my last class for my master's program, woo-hoo, which is such a relief. So I am just a few weeks away from being completely done, which is super exciting. I can feel the end. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. So it's coming.
That's the only time you go towards the light.
Yes, very true. Very true. Otherwise, try and avoid it if you can. That would definitely be my high. Just doing my best to push through. It is a lot to grind through over the next few weeks. That's for sure. But I will make it through.
You will.
Sooner rather than later, it'll be done. So I'm grateful for that. That would be my high. My low, if I can be honest, I've definitely been a little stressed about finances, about money recently. I shared on the podcast last month about my trip to the ER, which was not great. And I am all healed, right? Everything is good. And my insurance did obviously cover a majority of the visit, but nice hefty hospital bill to take care of that we are now navigating through, making payments and just figuring that out. So
yeah. Well, I'm happy here.
It's fun.
Yeah. Oh no, right? It's the greatest. But I'm happy to hear that you're feeling better, that you're all healed up, because that must have been really scary.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yes. But May has been a much better month health-wise. So I'm very thankful for that. So yeah, no real inconsistency with the weather here, ma'am. We are in our triple digits. Yes.
Oh. I'm pretty sure.
No, I lie. My watch says 99 degrees today.
Oh, that's so much better than 100. Like, there's such a big difference. I'm happy that it's only 99. So.
What did I say? Well, what are you drinking?
Let's see. So I am trying something a little bit newer, a wine, type of wine I've never had. It's called Malbec. So that's the type of wine it is. Yes. Mm-hmm. Never had it, but I do enjoy it. It's called, so the brand is called Alamos. And it's an Argentinian wine. Let's see. Let me read here. Alamos Malbec displays hints of dark cherry and black cherry with a long and lingering finish. This balanced and full-flavored wine is excellent with grilled meats and vegetables. Nice. So we'll see about that. I'm eating it with nothing. So let's see how it tastes with just air. So.
Did you just say you're eating wine with nothing?
I said
the bottle have you had already, Miss Charles?
So we were talking for a little bit before this, and I was sipping wine throughout that time. So.
She started early, listeners. Yeah. She started early.
I just start a little early, but it's a good wine. I like it a lot. Yeah, it's a flavor I've never really tried before. I think, like, as I get older, I am gravitating more towards those like darker, smokier, like flavors.
Okay.
And that's definitely what this gives off. Like when I taste it, it's like this, I don't know, it's just like this really dark, like the taste of the fruit in there, very light and subtle. Not a dry wine. Still don't like those, but I am enjoying it so far.
It's funny that you bring that up and that you're drinking a Malbec today mm-hmm. for the podcast, because if somebody were to ask me to recommend a wine to you specifically, I actually would choose Malbec for you. So that's funny that you, yeah, 100%. I have only tried a couple. I don't even know what I've tried. It's not my taste personally. Like I've probably had one that I liked, but I like that for you. I enjoy where this is going for you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy for you and your Malbec.
Thank you. We're very happy together today. What about you? What are you drinking?
Yeah. So I was gifted for graduation some Josh Sellers Prosecco.
Oh.
And I decided to go mimosa style today with some pineapple juice.
Oh my goodness. That sounds so good. Yep. So good.
Because Prosecco's too dry for me. Brut Rosé is too dry for me. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely the season. This is definitely the time of year. Feeling the fruit. Feeling like it's just in the air. It's needed.
It's a fruity time of year, so it makes sense.
I love it. Anyway, my goodness. Okay, should we dive into this book? You ready?
I am ready. I'm really excited to talk about this book, actually.
I'm excited to discuss it with you too. Okay, so listeners, we read Hello Beautiful by Anne Napolitano. Abby, initial thoughts. Go for it. What did you think?
So initial thoughts. I like the book overall. I would give it a 10 out of 10 for good character development for a lot of the major characters who played a really major role, even the minor characters. I feel like they developed so well throughout the book and did a really great job with really, I don't know how to describe it, but really having us invest in these characters in a really an emotional way, like have an attachment to them.
Yes.
I really enjoyed all the themes that they hit. I really enjoyed the writing style. I devoured this book, to be honest. So that's just kind of my...
It was not hard to devour.
Yeah. Like at first I was... There were some parts that I'll say that lag probably towards like the beginning a little bit. But then once it developed, I was like, I'm already done with this book. Like, I'm going to finish it today. Initial thoughts. Those are my overall thoughts. And I'll get deeper into that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, thank you for sharing. And for me, this was, similar to you. I mean, I feel like I just dove into this book headfirst, there were a couple of parts that might have lagged a little bit for me, but the storyline, the character development, the storytelling, I mean, Anne Napolitano is just incredibly gifted. I thought that it was really well written. So
Oprah liked herself.
I mean, that's a telltale sign right there.
Oprah approved.
Mm-hmm. Important.
It's true. So yes, I'm with you. If we're doing a rating, that's really interesting. So you did the whole 10 out of 10.
Ooh.
I guess I would go maybe more like 8.5. 8 to 8.5 out of 10.
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
Nice. Yes.
So, listener, we are trying something a little bit different here on Tales Over Tales podcast for this month. Normally, we would recap the entire book for you, start to finish, and just sort of share all of the details and whatnot. But we decided to try something a little bit different. So I asked Abigail to come up with a summary of the entire book, the plot, so that she could go ahead and read that to us, read that for us, and then we will go ahead and carry on with the discussion. So, oh, and the reason that Abigail was tasked with doing this was because this was her book selection. So,
yeah,
which you are very talented at. I will give it to you. I appreciate and admire both you and Alicia are super good at selecting books. So go ahead, take it away, Abby.
Okay. Well, you know, really the name of the book is Hollow Beautiful, and Hollow Beautiful works to answer the question, can love make a broken person whole? So we follow many characters' lives and stories in this novel. The main one being the story of William. It's set in Chicago, Illinois throughout the 1980s to mid 2000s. We follow William's story from the beginning when his sister Caroline's story ends. She died when William is just a few days old and she is 3 years old. We're not really told what happened or what illness that we have, but we just know that this happened and it played a major role. So this leaves William's parents devastated and void. William is left to raise himself basically and spends much of his life in isolation. He finds solace in the game of basketball at age 5. And this plays an important role throughout his life. He gets a full scholarship to Northwestern University. In college, he meets his future wives. Yes, wives. Julia Padovano? Butchered it. But and her sister, Sylvie. When he first meets Julia, his life changes in various ways. He finds love and experiences the love of family, both for the first time. He also comes face to face with his own brokenness for the first time. Through the love and support of his friends and new family, he pulls through and begins to heal. Hollow Beautiful is a story about the healing power of love in its many forms.
Oof, my goodness. Mm-hmm. This was a rich story. Mm-hmm. I thought so, personally.
Yes.
I liked how, by the way, too, great job with that summary. I should have said that. That was very well done.
Thanks. So, I especially like the part where I practiced how to say her last name and I forgot.
Padovano.
Yes, Padovano. That's it.
Padovano.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, listener, so we follow along with William's story, with Julia's story, and then her sisters, Cecilia, Sylvie, oh my God, Emmeline. Mm-hmm. I almost blanked on, I was like, no, don't forget.
I love how they have such like artistic, whimsical names, you know, like very, like there, you can tell. So one of the things is, so their father, Charlie, he is very into poetry. And I love how all of his daughter's names are very poetic. So yes. Really just, you know, you can tell he played a role in naming his daughters.
Absolutely. No, that was so, yeah, that was absolutely very cool. Mm-hmm. And this book too, so being written throughout various years and also being written from different points of view. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I mean, that was just, I thought that it was really cool. Anytime an author writes from different perspectives, that is so profound to me, in my opinion. So I really liked it. Listener, before we started recording, though, should we just dive into the fact that we are not big fans of Julia, though?
Yes, I think that's where definitely where to start, because she also plays a very major role in the lives of many of the, if not all the characters. So
she does. Mm-hmm. She does. There was a, and I don't know if this would be true for you, there was certainly a part of me, I understood her motivation. I understood why and how she was so calculating, how she could, you know, sort of methodically put all of these things together. So, listener, just to give you a little bit of context and background there, Julia is the oldest of the four sisters, Sylvie coming after her, and then Cecilia and Emmeline are twins. Mm-hmm. And the four of them are incredibly close, incredibly, incredibly close. They make references to Little Women, which, you know, just spoke to my heart. I was like, oh, I love it so much. However, Julia, being the oldest, was always the problem solver, right? Mm-hmm. And she always had to keep everybody in line, keep the peace, and she had to have all of the answers, which I do think was to her detriment, was to sort of her downfall, kind of, if you will. Listener, if you are following along and you've read the book, you know William and Julia were not perfectly matched. They just were not compatible, in my opinion, at all.
I agree with that. You know, and just to give a little bit like context about Julia and her perfectionism and her planning. So it goes, it stems really from her parents and her upbringing. So yes. Her mother and father got married. I think her mother was pretty young. So she got married when she was, her mom got married because she was pregnant with Julia. And, you know, she was in love with her father, Julia's father. So his name is Charlie. And the mother's name is Rose, Rose. So Charlie and Rose, you know, they were in love, but really their story, really has like the tag, should have the tagline that, love don't pay the bills. So,
no.
Yeah,
that is very true.
Yeah, because they've struggled a lot, and Julia Rose worked very hard to keep everything afloat. So she was just like a captain and keeping everyone in line and making sure her daughters had every opportunity that she didn't. And she, you know, she really like drilled it into her daughters, you need to go to school. So Julia, being the oldest, she's been drilled with this knowledge a lot longer. So she's had to create a plan, you know, yep, for herself and for her family. So going back to the fact that her and William aren't matched, they really fall in love with who they, like the perception of one another, instead of actually falling in love. Right. Julia liked William because he was tall, handsome, and she, you know, she had a perception that he had his life planned out, or he knew what he was trying to do. And then whenever there are moments where he didn't have a plan, she would insert her own plan. And so he'd go along with that. So basically she was making the plans for their life and he was just following along because he had no plans. He never really thought about it. And that really, and the reason that is because William has struggled with depression all his life and it hasn't been named. It's just been something that he's lived with. His parents had it. He experienced it. And so he just really did not have a plan. You know, usually people with depression, it's hard to think about the future. It's such a struggle because you're trying so hard to to figure out the present. So yeah, I agree. They were not a perfect match. I don't think the stars were aligned. I think that Julia just locked her eyes on him and just thought, I can mold him into what I want him to be for me to have this perfect future that I want.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And that's not to say, too, that William wasn't attracted or drawn to Julia and to the Padovano family, right? Mm-hmm. He saw this dynamic among all of these people and how they brought him in. And I do think that that was part of what kept him going, what kept him where he was. Mm-hmm. And you see that throughout the story, right? My gosh. And just thinking about, you know, so once they get married and whatnot too, Julia doesn't know what to do with William's depression. And mm-hmm. to your point, there wasn't a ton of language around that at the time either. Yeah. So honestly, mm-hmm. listener, too, just the way that Anne Napolitano goes about addressing the issue, mm-hmm. it is very sensitive, and she does a really great job at it. I guess I'll insert a trigger warning here. Listener, go ahead and skip like the next 30 to 90 seconds, perhaps, because we're going to be talking about attempted suicide. Mm-hmm. And it is, I don't know if that surprised you at the point that it came in the book. What were your thoughts when William attempted suicide?
To be honest, I was surprised that he didn't attempt it before.
Okay.
Because of just how William was described throughout the book. He just kind of was just floating along, right? He wasn't sure of what direction to take. His emotions were numbed a lot of the time. He was very down on himself. So he was experiencing something called negative self-talk, where he just didn't think he was a good person. He didn't think he was good enough. He didn't think he was worthy of being loved. Mm-hmm. And so he experienced his whole life this way, especially he didn't experience love until he got to college. Right. His parents were not emotionally available. His parents had no interest in him or raising him. They just felt like, oh, it was, they felt obligated. That's the word I'm searching for. Obligated to do so. And because he's never experienced love from a caregiver, he experienced something called, attachment style. So there are four types of attachments. So there's anxious attachment, there's avoidant, right? There's secure, and there's disorganized. And so, because of the fact that he didn't feel love from his caregivers, my assumption is that he had anxious attachment style. He was worried about being abandoned. And you can see that in his relationship with Julia as time went on. He was very fearful of being abandoned by her because she gave him purpose and she gave him, you know, direction. And he had a fear that if she ever found out who he really was, he wouldn't be loved. He would just right. be cast away. And so that fear just really becomes more and more evident as their relationship builds. So they get married right after they graduate their undergrad. And then Julia gets pregnant and he starts his PhD program, which she led him into. And so their relationship just becomes more and more tense as things get added on. But yeah, so with William's suicide, after I think his daughter was less than a year old when he attempted. Mm-hmm. So initial question, I was surprised that didn't happen earlier or that he didn't try to harm himself earlier. But it might be that basketball was such a great coping skill that it deterred or pushed back any of those negative emotions that he's been feeling all his life.
Well, I think the other thing that was challenging was Alice's birth, right? Mm. So, listener, William and Julia have their daughter, Alice, and one kind of factor to bring up or to talk about is, you know, Julia even brings up to her sisters or like talks about how she notices that William won't hold his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He very barely interacts with this newborn, right? With this baby that's supposed to be his. And a lot of that has to do with his childhood and with how he was raised. He wasn't really even excited through Julia's pregnancy,
mm-hmm,
because he had no idea, no example of what a father was supposed to look like. So even following the suicide attempt, this was before, and what drove him, I think, to a lot of that, he thought that he was protecting Alice. He was protecting Julia. He was keeping them safe by removing himself because it would just be better if he wasn't there. Right.
Mm-hmm. He was convinced of his own brokenness to the point that he wanted to push everybody around him away. And so this brings me back to my dislike of Julia, where moment where he needed someone to love him, someone to stand by him, his side, she abandoned him. She did. She left, you know, he was in the hospital. She never went to visit. She never called to ask how he was doing. It was her sister Sylvie that stepped up.
Right. And here's the thing. You can make an excuse. You can justify it by saying Julia didn't know what she was doing. Okay. Valid. Fair. Mm-hmm. She didn't know how to handle any of it. So on and so forth. Okay. Sure. I understand that too. The foundation of their marriage, the foundation of their relationship, was not rooted in love. And I say that because she would have been there even if she didn't understand. Mm-hmm. She would have sought to understand.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And to give context to the moment that we're the pivotal moment we're talking about is that William starts to have a breakdown, like a mental breakdown. He stops attending his courses for his PhD program. He stops teaching, and he spends his days at the basketball court watching the players, and he doesn't tell his wife this. And so she calls looking for him one day. And they say, like, they, you know, the administrative assistant said they haven't seen him. And so he came home. He lied about where he'd been. He, like, said something about, like, oh, this is what something happened in class. And so she called him out saying and said, I know that you haven't been attending class. So he gets up without saying a word. He goes and he writes a note. And he had this check that his parents had written him. After graduation, before he got married, for like $10,000. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was like his parents saying goodbye, like, we want nothing to do with you after this, type of thing. So he never cashed it. Anyways,
well,
so
they didn't even come to the wedding.
No, they didn't want to come to the wedding. They had no interest in it. And we'll get, and you know, when he's in the hospital attempts to reach out to his parents, and his parents say he's an adult now. So he can handle himself. So really, that just kind of drives home that they just weren't there. And yeah. So he hands them the note, say her on Julia the note saying, I don't want to be married anymore. Basically, I want a divorce. You know, I forget what, like, specifically what it says, but basically he ends his marriage and just walks out the door. And she didn't even question it. All she thought was she was upset. Which is understandable. That's an understandable emotion. Like, you know, your husband has been lying to you. And then when you call him out, he gives you this check. You didn't even know he had. And this note saying that he wants a divorce. Understandable why she gets upset. But never did she once ask why is he doing this? It took her sister, Sylvie, which is the second eldest, closest to her in age, who was, you know, when Julia called her, Sylvie was like, wait, why did he do that? And Julia, this is the part where I solidified that I do not like her. She said, why are you worrying about him? It's me you should be yep. worried about. And I was like, yeah. I don't like her. I don't like this girl. So, yeah. And so there's like a whole search party of his best friends and other people on the basketball team who really care about him, his other friends. And Sylvie, they search all night. And, you know, they eventually find him in a lake and, you know, they pull him out and then he's hospitalized. So, yeah, it was a very intense, intense moment. So, you know, readers, again, like the next like probably the five minutes prior to this are probably not.
I should have added that ahead of time.
No. Absolutely. No, I think this is an important part of the book. And it's also always important to give trigger warnings. But yeah, we talk about this for about 5 minutes in case you're wondering. This is the stop point.
Let's talk a little bit about the Padovanos, though, because while they may have had a questionable and rocky marriage, I mean, I kind of liked Charlie and Rose. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought I was not going to be a fan of Charlie, their father, mm-hmm. right? Listener, he is described as an alcoholic. He struggles with alcoholism. He battles issues with his work ethic, his motivation mm-hmm. to work, and that's where Rose, as his wife and the mother of four girls, has to step in doing anything she can, from selling vegetables in her garden, even trading or bartering for meat and different things like that, so that mm-hmm. they are able as a family to make ends meet.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, I thought he was going to be this like absolutely horrible, terrible character.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't at all.
No. I think he was, yeah, he loved his family. And so
he had his demons. I'm not discounting that. I just, yeah. I don't know. Did you feel that at all?
That's what I thought initially, the way that he was described. I think by Julia had described him in a very certain way. And yeah, and then you realize as you get to know Charlie, and even after he does pass away. Even after, so he's so present in the lives of each of his daughters. Mm-hmm. It's really evident that he's the glue that held them together emotionally. Like the mom, she's the captain. She had to steer them. She had to be the real, you know, the realist because of her experience, and she wanted her daughters to have different experiences. Yet he brought the fun, he brought the whimsy, right? He brought the poetry and the love and the nurturing part of the relationship so he played a very major role in the lives of each of his daughters. So yeah, he was an A+ character. As we got to know him throughout the book, listeners, I was like, I'm sad that Charlie's gone too. Like, that hurt my heart.
It certainly took me by surprise. So, listener, so Cecilia, one of the twins, mm-hmm. becomes a teenage mom. She gets pregnant. Was she 16, 17?
I think she was 17 because she was about to graduate high school.
Yes. So mm-hmm. she was 17. She has a daughter. She shares with her sisters she has no intention to raise this daughter with the guy that is the father.
Mm-hmm.
She's just going to go ahead and go it alone on her own by herself. And yeah. She gives birth to Izzy, Isabella. Mm-hmm. And Charlie comes to see his first grandchild in the hospital after Cecilia gives birth. And as he leaves, he just drops dead. Mm-hmm. Had a heart attack.
Yep.
I was pretty shocked. That was not the direction I anticipated it going.
Because you think so, just to rewind a little bit, when Cecilia gets pregnant, Rose is like, either like, get rid of the baby or we kick you out and we'll never speak to you again. And Cecilia's like, well, bye, basically. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, she makes it on her own. She has this baby. And so this is the first time Charlie saw her, seen her since Rose kicked her out, Cecilia. So he sees his daughter again. He meets his granddaughter. Then, yeah, he walks out the door and down the hall just drops. And I'm just like, no. And it's such a pivotal like moment for the story. No. I think that was the time the story just shifted so much because Julia was still pregnant too. So this is before everything really came down for them.
Yes.
And also as a side note, Julia only got pregnant like because she found out her sister Cecilia was pregnant and she wanted to try to fix everything in her family. So she thought having a baby would bring her family back together after Rose kicked Cecilia out. So they didn't really talk about having a baby. She didn't really state her reason. She just went into, I'm going to fix this mode. And didn't even consider William's feelings. Another reason I don't like her.
Well, and she did want to be a mom. She did want to be a mother. Like, that wasn't a doubt or a question. I think she also had a feeling, had a sense for what was going on with William. And again, had this thought in her brain, a baby will fix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how many women in society today have these thoughts or couples think that having a child is the solution, is the answer.
It happens so often. Like, I don't understand the logic, but yeah, women in society. There are women in society who have the train of thought that, oh, baby equals fixing everything. Not to say that never, ever happens, but it so rarely happens. But it's such a common mindset.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. And I think that's the other, you know, sort of challenge with all of it, too. So Rose, the mother of all of these beautiful four daughters, I mean, she is this devout Catholic, devastated that her husband has died. She's got a daughter that she's disowned. Her oldest is married.
Yeah.
Lister, she just up and goes to Florida.
Yeah, she's like, bye.
What did you think of that?
I think that she has been waiting for an escape for a very long time. Probably. I'm going to be real. I think she's been waiting for an escape for a very long time. And she took the opportunity to live her life, which I don't fault her for that because Rose has had a hard life. She's raised four daughters and tried her best to raise them the right way. She's had to make up for her husband's shortcomings. For like 20 something years, she's never lived for herself. Everything that she's done since the moment she got pregnant, the moment she married Charlie, has been for the benefit of keeping her family afloat. And she's never done anything for herself. So a part of me wanted to view that as selfish. You know, there are selfish tendencies in her actions, you know, in other spaces. Yeah, a part of me felt for her. I'm like, girl, run. Like, you know, be free, live your life, you know, and even as she speaks to Julia, because Julia ends up being like the only daughter she really talks to. Like she talks about, oh, I learned how to cook this thing. I've been here and I've made friends. She's living a life that she never had the opportunity to live. So I feel for her. And so I was just like, girl, run.
I guess my question to you in that then, though, would be, was it the right time for her to do that, though?
I think timing-wise, it wasn't the right time. Yet, I think she also recognized that if she didn't do it now, it would never be the right time. Because then she'd have to help. She'd stay and she'd help Julia raise her daughter. She'd, you know, try to take on the responsibilities of her daughters still. And my assumption is maybe she recognized that there was not going to be a perfect time, and she just needed to leave when she needed to leave. That's my assumption for it. Not perfect. I don't think the exit was graceful. I think she burned a lot of bridges with her decision, and she really solidified the ending of her relationships with some of her daughters by leaving. Yeah. At the same time, I think I just fell for her as a character who's never got an opportunity to live her life fully.
Yeah, I can see some of that. And I do hear what you're saying. My heart broke for Cecilia, though, going to the airport.
Yeah.
On her own with this baby. She's got her older sister, Julia, that's pregnant, who has taken Rose to the airport. And Cecilia's like, Mom, I love you. Like, I'm here because I love you. And I'll still be here even if you won't acknowledge your granddaughter that's right here. That was just devastating.
Yeah. And it kind of brought, I almost forgot this theme that I was thinking about in this book, that life and like new beginnings and endings happen simultaneously with the birth of Izzy and the death of Charlie, the parting of Rose, and the same day Julia goes into labor.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Alice is born. So I just think that there's like a give and take that happens throughout the life of the sisters. And so that's something that caught, like, that really, like, after Rose left and Julia went into labor, I'm like, I feel like this is like a theme in their lives. Like, something ends, but then there's always something to, like, that begins that they can look forward to. Like, even when, well, I guess we can get into a part when Julia decides to leave.
Sure.
Yeah. So Julia leaves, and like, while William's in the hospital, he was in the hospital for several months. He was hospitalized after his attempt. And so she took that as an opportunity. She, you know, her old mentor had an opportunity come up for her to go to New York. Yeah, New York. And so she's like, yeah, I'm going to take this opportunity. This is a great opportunity for new beginnings. And so she sends divorce papers with her sister, Sylvie, and is like, all right, can you give him these divorce papers to sign? Mind you, she's had no contact with him for several months. But also, William has preferred it that way. He's explicitly said, like, to Sylvie, who's been the messenger back and forth at this point, that I, you know, he doesn't want to see Julia. And so, that's something that happens. So Julia takes Alice and she moves to New York to start a new life that was only supposed to be for 6 months. So that ended. So his marriage ended for an opportunity for something new to blossom. So I don't know if you want to speak on his blossoming love there.
I see what you did there. Nice segue. Nice. So, listener, you did not hear the summary wrong. William's second wife ends up being Potavano's sister number two, Sylvie. Okay. Hold up and wait a second. Let's talk about how weird that is for a moment. It's weird. I mean,
it's weird.
It's weird. It's a little weird. I get it. It's a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
Was I rooting for William and Sylvie throughout the book, though? Of course.
Yes. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. I was like, I had this moment as well. I was like, this is weird. But yeah.
But yeah. Go for it. No, so of course I connected a lot with Sylvie. I loved Sylvie's character. So listener, Sylvie is daughter number two of Charlie and Rose. She goes on to become a librarian. She's a bookworm. She just absolutely loves learning, reading, doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. And that ends up being the catalyst for the relationship that is William and Sylvie's. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when we read from Sylvie's point of view, she knows her sister, her older sister, like she knows Julia has never totally fully accepted or understood William. From the time they met and started dating to engagement, marriage, parenthood, throughout it, right? Mm-hmm. Sylvie is watching her older sister with this man that she is trying, that Julia is trying to mold and shape into the man that she wants him to be, rather than letting him be the man that he is. Mm-hmm. Loving and accepting him for who he is. And this is, I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm going off on a tangent now, but like, I will tell you as a newlywed myself, right? Like that's a big lesson to learn. Mm. And I'm still learning it. I haven't perfected that at all, right? But accepting and embracing the differences within a relationship and what makes each of you unique and who you are. And from the moment Sylvie saw William, she thought, oh, like he's okay, he's interesting. Mm-hmm. And okay, no, but that's like, but that's my sister's significant other. I'm not gonna go there. And then seeing the way Julia treated him throughout all of that. Oh man. Mm-hmm. I just And then when William and Sylvie do finally get together, it is really beautiful. And I liked them together a lot. They balance each other out really well in their similarities and in their differences. I don't know. What did you think? Did you agree?
I agree. Their love story is very beautifully written, where, you know, just kind of going off of what you were saying before is that when they saw each other, their first instinct wasn't, oh, I need to change this person to fit into what I need them to be or mold. That's not love. And so that's how you recognize that what Julia was doing was not love, like you were saying. It's love is taking someone as they are and loving them into like them deciding to grow into who they need to be. It's not you decide like you need to change this. This is what you need to do differently. Like this, you know, not like giving them a to-do list on things that they need to change. It's seeing them and saying like, oh, I like you're different from me, but I love every part of your differences and I love growing with you. And so that's exactly what they did. They grew together. Where Sylvie, she was like this immature romantic, hopeless romantic. Like let's say that. Like she'll like, so she was in this, when she was working in the library, when she was like a teenager and in, you know, her early like 20s. So she'd meet boys in the stacks of like the rows of the library and just like make out with them, not have a relationship. Cause she said, I have no intention of dating. So she would just like make out with these guys and said like, oh, when, you know, basically one of her purposes was that when she meets the one, she wants to be able to like feel the difference and she wants to be able to kiss him well. And so she has this like hopeless romantic part of her, which is so much Charlie, who is the poet and the romantic and the one who loves love. So she takes after him so much. And so you see that through William's struggle, she does mature some. So she does mature where she goes, stops going to doing things like off of her whim. And she is really caring and loving about towards someone else. Not to say she's never had those attributes, but being like having this romantic love towards someone else and building that. Yeah, their story has been is so beautiful. The way they grow together, that he decide like with her, she gives him the space to decide what he wants to do next. And he decides to, you know, have pursue a master's degree in something that he feels really passionate about. And it's because of her letting him grow and flourish, he was able to do that. And then her being able to pursue being a librarian, right? Being the head librarian, that was something that was brought up through, you know, through just like the gentleness of their love. And honestly, that's such a marker for them. Their love has been like, it was such a gentle love and gentle courtship and just relationship. And they had struggles for like a millisecond, like, oh, but Julia, yet, you know, they were like, you know what, we love each other. And that's the important thing. But yeah, their love story is beautiful.
Oh, I agree. I thought it was so, so good. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. So I guess that's kind of a good transition point as well to go into or to talk about even just reconciliation, right? And what all of that looked like. Yeah. Because Julia leaves for New York thinking, you know, yeah, it's going to be this short period of time. All of her sisters knew that she was running away. Cecilia called her out on it. Emmy called her out on it. Sylvie called her out on it. Mm-hmm. And she ends up staying in New York and becoming extremely successful, which is awesome for her. Once she learns from her other sisters, though, that William and Sylvie are together, I mean, she has no interest, no desire in coming back and attempting to repair or rebuild a life with close proximity to her family, if you will.
Yeah. Did you ever think she was coming back? I knew she wasn't going to come back. Like, the moment she left, I was like, she's going to fall in love with New York and then she's never going to come back. I think that was like everything valid, that everything that happened with her sister solidified that. I think that she had already made up her mind with staying in New York and raising Alice as a single mother. And, you know, I think she tried her best as a single mother. And I think that she did some pretty messed up things as a single mother.
Okay, tell me that.
I will say the two things that I think that are messed up is that when she told her daughter that William was dead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that made me so mad.
Yes. She told her daughter that William was dead out of spite. And so she said that he had died in a car crash. Mm-hmm. And so then she became obsessed and worried and anxious about dying in a car. So for Alice, it created this anxiety, this fake story. So I think that was messed up. Like she was
this young little kid that did a school report on car crashes.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I was like, what are you thinking? And it was like a random Tuesday that Julia told her. They were just like, I think they were eating at the dinner table or something. And then she was like, oh, by the way, your father died in a car crash. His name was William. So the end. Like that's all she got from that. And she isolated Alice from her family.
Yeah.
So the only family she knew was her mother and Rose growing up. So that was my issues with her, like with like motherhood. I think that she wanted to do the best that she could, and she's human, so she fails. Yet the way she fails was that she was still trying to fix, you know, no matter what, and not thinking about her daughter's feelings.
She thought that she was thinking about Alice, though, right? Mm-hmm. She thought she was doing what was best for Alice.
Yeah.
And even once Alice finally does make her way to Chicago and is figuring out or navigating all of these connections with these new family members, meeting her aunts and her cousin Izzy, and learning about William's struggles with mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, listener, we hear from Alice's point of view. Mm-hmm. And she starts connecting different dots, going, that was why my mother always asked me, do you feel sad? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this, that, or the other? Whenever Julia didn't see Alice smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Julia didn't see Alice thriving,
mm-hmm.
she went to the immediate extreme opposite, right?
Yeah.
And she said, oh no, I don't want her to struggle like William. I don't want her to be like William.
Yes, absolutely. No, I agree with that. And so let's talk about the reason Alice makes her way to Chicago, though.
Do it.
Yeah.
She's going to break my heart, but do it.
So initially Alice makes her way to Chicago to meet William. She finds out finds out about him, and she's like, I'm going to Chicago to meet my dad and confront him. And so she does that. She goes to Chicago. She waits for him at his work, but he never shows up. So the person who worked in the reception area said, like, oh, you know, here's his number. This is where you can reach him if you need it. And then she calls the number. She gets her cousin Izzy. And Izzy's like, you need to come. The family needs you.
I think Izzy says something like, come home.
Yeah, come
or
home.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And so she gets to the house. And so... This breaks my heart. I don't even want to say it. You say it. I can't say it.
I don't even want to talk about it. I just
so sad.
Okay, so Sylvie is in her 40s, right? William and Sylvie have been married at this point for a few years. Things have been going really well. And then her health starts declining. And she finds out that she has a tumor, and she's given less than a year, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. I think a couple of months.
Yeah, maybe 3 to 6 months. I mm-hmm. can't remember. Yeah. And backing up for you, listener, to provide a little bit more of that context, right? So we talked about how the story goes from the 60s, 70s, 80s, all the way through to the early 2000s. And so when Alice is a young adult, by this point in the early 2000s, and we now have this crazy new thing called the internet, and, you know, she finally is able to discover from Julia that her father didn't die in a car accident. Mm-hmm. She's able to use this internet to do all of this research, and with the help of some of her friends, finds out that her dad works for the Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I think that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I think that was like a good like full circle for William. Like, he needed that win. Like, he found his dream job with a team that he loved, and he was really surrounded by people that he loved, so that, you know, when Sylvie was diagnosed with like having that brain tumor, he had more than what he had before his attempt. Mm-hmm. Like, he had love of family, of friends, people who were supportive of him. Even Alice, the first time she ever sees him, is like, he's grieving Sylvie's loss and how everybody rallies around him. And she connects the dots. She's like, these people love him. Like, that's why they're here. They love him.
Yeah.
And she sees that, you know, and, you know, if you, like, honestly, if you just meet a person and you know nothing else about them, but you see how much the people around them love them, that tells a lot about the person.
I think that's a testament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's what softened her heart to even want to stay and try to forgive and move forward with William and have a relationship with her dad.
Yeah, because she arrives from New York to Chicago basically the day that Sylvie dies, mm-hmm. the day that Sylvie passes.
Really? That beginning and end thing that happens, the end of his marriage with the beginning of his relationship with his daughter, like...
I know. Mm-hmm. Ugh. It was, yes. And then we learn at that section of the story as well, because of how close Julia and Sylvie were, William knows Sylvie needs her sister.
Mm-hmm.
When Sylvie is diagnosed, that is immediately the first thing that even both William and Sylvie think of.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my sister? Like, I need my sister. She needs her sister. Mm-hmm. So William ends up calling Alice and, or sorry, calling Julia and letting her know what's going on. And I did also think that it was really cool how Julia wrestled through all of that. And she does end up visiting Sylvie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was really nice and really sweet how those encounters, those, you know, few brief exchanges they got to have before Sylvie died, the fact that they kept that to themselves. So we learned that they, you know, when Julia first comes back to Chicago from New York, mm-hmm. they go to their dad's favorite bar. Yeah. That's the first spot that they go to.
Mm-hmm.
And at first Sylvie is very much like, is this real? Are you actually here? It's been years, so on and so forth. And they are able to eventually, you know, reach that point of reconciliation. And I think Julia is able to come back one or two other times, mm-hmm. and they go to a movie. They get to, you know, just have some really good final bonding time.
That was
needed. It was important.
Absolutely. And yeah, I love how it did develop, and how it, that was the reconciliation that needed to happen, you know, as Sylvie's life was ending. And so she left being completely reconciled with everyone except for Alice, right? She wanted a relationship with Alice. And so that was Sylvie was also writing this book with a bunch of memories. So it wasn't really a book. It was just, you know, to be published. It was something that just was filled with memories. And so she left it to Alice before she passed away. She wanted Alice to have it so Alice can share in all the memories that, mm-hmm. you know, about her family, about her father, about all these different things, so that, you know, she can be caught up and feel included in the family.
It was
a beautiful book.
Dang.
Mm-hmm.
Rip your heart out at times, you know? Put you through it. It put you through it a little bit. This did have me thinking that it could make for a really awesome TV show.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Do we need to have a segment of this podcast where we talk about who we envision playing who?
Oh, right. Oh,
okay, let's do this. Let's talk about it. Okay, so real quick. Well, yep. We'll get into some end matter after this. Okay, so casting William, Julia, and Sylvie first.
Okay.
This is hard.
This is difficult. So William,
he's got to be super tall.
He has to be super tall, and have like a bit of like awkward and lanky. Who can I think of like an actor wise that's tall and lanky?
Why does Eddie Redmayne come to me?
Ooh, I can see that. I can see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? I agree. I think he would make a good William.
Okay.
He has a lot of range as an actor, and I think he can go to that place.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sylvie, who can I see as Sylvie? I'm trying to think. And you want to know something? Actually, the person that comes to mind is like, oh my goodness. Why can't I think of her name right now? She was... goodness, what was she? She was in like Hide and Seek, this like scary movie with like Robert De Niro.
Not Brittany Murphy.
No, sorry, not her.
No, Dakota Fanning. Somebody else.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Dakota Fanning. I can see as Sylvie.
She's not very Italian looking though.
Oh well, you know, she can just dye her hair. Neither is Eddie Redmayne. he's not
Italian.
Where is he again? He's Irish, I think. Oh yeah, so it'll work out. She can dye her hair, but I can see her in that role, honestly. Okay. I like her for that because she's also another actress that has really good range. And so I think that she can play Sylvie very, very well in the way that like she can be whimsical, she can be, you know, she can like be in that space to grow with him. So that's kind of my thoughts. I don't know. You probably have someone different, but that's like the person who comes to mind when I think of that.
No, I'll accept. Mm-hmm. I'll accept. I like your rationale. I like your reasoning. Okay. Julia, to play Julia. I don't know. That's hard. I'm like trying to think.
Let's see.
I'm almost picturing, I don't know why, someone like Anne Hathaway.
I was literally just thinking that. That is so crazy. Really? Yes, I was literally just thinking Anne Hathaway.
I don't know.
I can see it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, who would play the twins? Julia and Emmeline.
That one's going to be a little bit hard. I'm trying to think of like younger actresses, and I'm trying to think of who's like newer who can play.
I feel like I don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness! Why did Brie Larson just come to my mind?
Brie Larson. I can see that like older version of the twin, like the one of the Cecilia. I can see her as Cecilia.
Like, Yes. I don't know. It never says if they're identical or fraternal twins. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly, but we'll have to refine this segment if we continue going on with it. But right? I like it.
Absolutely. You know, actually, no, I changed my answer. You know who I can see playing one of the twins? Jenna Ortega. She played Wednesday Addams.
There you go.
I can see her playing the twins because I've seen the other things that she's been in.
Okay.
And I think she can fit the look very well. I think that she has a very strong personality. So she can, I would definitely say Cecilia for sure. She can be that driving force where she seems, you know, really like quiet or, you know, I'm going to do whatever my sister says at first, but then like play that role of like switching, you know, and stepping into herself as an adult. I can see Jenna Ortega as Cecilia.
Solid choice.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Anyone else? I'm throwing a blank. That's all I got.
Well, my friend, I guess I should let you get to the rest of your evening. But before I do, we'll get into some end matter. I know we will miss you on the podcast the next couple months, but that's okay. You'll come back and join us hopefully in August, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like it. But listener, for the next book we are doing, we are reading Every Summer After by Carly Fortune.
Mm.
I'm excited to dive into that. It is Alicia's book pick of the month. And I will be excited to dive into that with her and talk about that. So be on the lookout for that next month. Again, it's Every Summer After by Carly Fortune. And in the meantime, listeners, please feel free to rate, review, subscribe. Let us know how you feel about these different topics we're bringing up, the different books we're reading, what you're thinking, even throwing suggestions out there. Yeah. You can follow the podcast. We do have a Tales Over Tales podcast. If you search for us on Instagram, we have an Instagram is what I meant. Social media. Hello. Yeah. You can find me at Miss, that's MS Jordan Alexis on Instagram.
And you can find me at the_Charles_ in underscore charge underscore.
I think you might need to change that.
No, when I try to make it one word, someone took that. So I'm like, I want it. So I'm going to make it work. So
you gotta make it happen. Oh my goodness. Friend, it's been so good getting to connect with you tonight. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. And again, thank you for selecting this book.
I loved it. So I'm happy we got to talk about it and share our thoughts about it, honestly.
Absolutely. Well, until then, friends, stay reading.
Stay classy.
And as always, stay drinking. Just don't drink too much so that you can't speak at the same time.
Stay drinking responsibly.
There it is. We should add that.
Yes.
All right. I love you.
All right. Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.